Welcome to the very first episode of this brand new series of Unchange, where we celebrate powerful women who have shattered glass ceilings, defied expectations, and chosen to lead on their own terms. In this series, we speak to women who have risen to the highest levels in their fields or built their own businesses from the ground up, not just despite the challenges they face, but often because of them. These are women who lead with courage, clarity, and conviction. Women who didn't just climb the ladder, but reimagined what leadership could look like. And I couldn't think of a better guest to help us launch this journey than Charlotte Otter. Charlotte is an author, speaker, leadership coach, and former journalist, whose new book, We Need New Leaders, has sparked important conversations around what leadership should be in a time of deep complexity and change. She brings decades of experience in corporate communications, and her voice is clear. It's time for a radical redesign, a new model of leadership that centers trust, authenticity, credibility, and connection. In this conversation, we'll explore Charlotte's personal journey, the real stories behind her research, and why reputation, especially for women leaders, is one of the most powerful tools we can learn to use intentionally. Welcome to the studio, Charlotte.
Thank you so much for having me, Petra. It's lovely to be here.
So I'd like to start with your own personal journey. I always like to get a little bit of an origin story of the people that I'm interviewing. I'll start with, what was your very first dream job as a child?
I said to my mother at the age of 5, before I could read, I want to be an author. I grew up as a child obsessed with books, and that was my dream job.
So you've lived your dream job, pretty much?
Yes, at I this have. Point. I published my third book. So my first two were novels set in South Africa, and now I've published my first nonfiction book. So I am living the life of an author, and it feels pretty great.
Well, let's talk more about that. So your career has spanned journalism, corporate communications, and now authorship. What through line connects all these chapters of your life?
Yeah, it's definitely writing and my fascination with the written word. You know, as a child obsessed with books and reading, I then, you know, developed an interest in writing and in the English language, studied English at university, but I knew for sure I didn't want to become an English teacher. So the next step was journalism, and after doing English honours at UCT, I then did the journalism postgrad course at Stellenbosch, and then moved into journalism as my first gig out of university. And I think that the connection is always writing between journalism, corporate communications, and what I do now. But it's also humans and what makes them tick. So I'm not a psychologist and I'm not a trained coach, but I'm so fascinated by individual people and what makes them show up the way that they do. So I think that's something I've been able to explore as a novelist, but something I've also explored in the current book, in which I interview 40 emerging and established leaders from diverse backgrounds.
So what inspired you to write We Need New Leaders? Was there a specific event that sparked an interest or a thought that you wanted to write this book?
Yeah, it came out of a thesis. So when I left corporate in 2022, I went back to university after 30 years and did an MSc in change leadership. And the thesis that I wrote was on reputation, so how the CEO and the head of comms build trust to manage and mitigate reputational risk. When that was finished, I spoke to my two professors and asked, you know, how should I take this forward? And the one said, well, you could do a PhD, and the other said, you could write a business book. And I thought, well, a business book will be quicker and it sounds more fun, so I think I'm going to do that. But really, there are a couple of sort of genesis points of We Need New Leaders. And one is, having grown up in South Africa during apartheid, even as a white person who benefited from apartheid, you know, we still switched on the TV and saw and heard those terrible leaders that we had in those days. So having been a child immersed in terrible leaders, but also having lived through the change in South Africa as an adult, there was the sense of things can get better and they can be transformed. And then during my course, another thing that was a spark was I learned about double loop and single loop leaders. And single loop leaders are leaders who see a problem, fix the problem. Problem goes away. Double loop leaders are leaders who see the problem, throw the resources at the problem, fix the problem, and then say to their teams, what was it in my behavior that contributed to causing this problem, and what do I need to look out for in the future to make sure that I don't cause this problem again? And if I look back at my corporate career through the lens of single and double loop leaders, there's a very stark division. There's no gray area. So people fall into one of the other categories. And so that really started to make me think that the extremely personal behavior of a leader has an incredibly intensive positive or negative effect on the people who report to them. And how could I explore that further?
So you did spend some time in corporates. You know, you were in corporate before you followed this path to become a fully fledged author. And what were your experiences as a woman in corporates? And how did that shape what you thought leadership should look like?
Yeah, it was so interesting because, first of all, the women who I grew up with all worked. So my mother and the mothers of my friends were nurses, secretaries, teachers. They were all hardworking women. But I never had an example of, in my family, of women who were leaders in corporate. So by the time I arrived, you know, the leaders around me were mostly men, or the few odd women who'd managed to escape the net and kind of get through. And I didn't have any role models. I didn't have any people I could look at and think, oh, that's how I want to be. So I talk about when I became a leader, and I became a leader myself quite late in corporate, that I felt like leadership was a coat I was putting on. And it didn't feel comfortable at first. I felt like I was wearing somebody else's coat. And it took me a few years to get comfortable and realize, oh, the way that I am actually is okay. That I don't have to be or take on or perform or mask. Being me and being a leader, the two things match. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, women bring a completely different flavor to leadership as well. I also spend a lot of time in corporate, so I understand completely the whole jacket, putting on the jacket and almost trying to be a man, because I was in a very male-dominated environment. So you almost feel like you have to lead like a man to get anything done in that environment, but it's not necessary. You can just be your own authentic self, and it brings a completely different flavor and a different perspective to people who you are leading. They sort of realize it doesn't need to be autocratic and like top-down leadership. In the book, you make a case that we need a radical redesign of leadership. So what is fundamentally broken and what should replace it?
Yeah, so one of the authors who I lent on while writing We Need New Leaders is an academic called Tomas Chamorro Premusic, and his book is Why Do So Many Incompetent Men Become Leaders? And his thesis is that we privilege confidence over competence. Mm-hmm. So we privilege what looks like leadership over competence, and we almost have an archetype. It's neuroscience. We have an archetype in our brains that we recognize instinctively before we bring our prefrontal lobe into play. We recognize loud, big, noisy, extrovert, room-filling, and this is the archetype that we have. So my sense of urgency with We Need New Leaders is the archetype is not serving us. Just take a look at the world that we're in. It's not doing us any good at all. So what are the qualities that emerging and established leaders from diverse backgrounds, so not of the leadership norm, diverse identities and underrepresented minorities, what are the qualities they bring that can help us learn to shift that archetype in our heads?
You make a very strong case for leaders who are clear, credible, and connected. What does each of those mean in practice?
Yeah, so clear, Brené Brown says clarity is kindness. And I do believe that the more clear leaders can be, the kinder and more helpful it is to their team. So transparency, instead of retaining information, keeping it to yourselves, using it for political gain. So I think clarity and transparency are really important. Credibility comes down to authenticity. And credibility also is closely tied into reputation, because you become not credible if your words and your behaviors don't match. And that is what I often say is, you know, the trust gap or where reputation fails. So leaders who tell a big story and use words and use narratives, but then behave in a completely different way, are actually actively making themselves not credible to their teams and to their audiences. And then what was the third C?
It was connected.
Connected, yeah. So, you know, that is about emotion. And what came up in my research is leaders from diverse backgrounds, diverse identities, underrepresented minorities have gone through obstacles to get where they are in corporates. Those obstacles help them to have empathy for themselves, first of all, and then for others as well. And that empathy makes them connected to their teams and the people that they're leading. And they have an understanding of inclusivity and how, it sounds weird, but how inclusivity actually builds candor, debate, and innovation in teams.
Mm. You mentioned reputation as one of the most underused leadership tools. Can you say a bit more about reputation? I know it's important to you.
Yeah, reputation is really important to me. And it wasn't something I knew was important to me. It just sort of grew over the years as I worked with executives on their profiles. I started to realize, oh, this is reputational. And then I did the thesis on how the CEO and the head of comms build trust to manage and mitigate reputational risk. And what I'm saying now to leaders with ambition to lead, but who may not be of the leadership norm, is your reputation equity is a power tool that you can use to really rocket fuel your way in the corporation. And, you know, there's so many examples of people who believe that just doing a good job is enough. And I'm saying that's 50% of the job. You have to talk about it. You have to show to your audiences that your abilities, you have to be able to record and demonstrate. And it's about what's known as effective telling. So, you know, people resist this talking about themselves because they're like, oh, it's self-promotion. Oh, it gives me the ick. Oh, I'm not comfortable with it. But if you don't talk about your own work, who's going to? I mean, you might be lucky enough to have one sponsor in the organization. Not everybody does. Maybe your sponsor's talking about you. But you need to find ways to show the people who matter in your organization what you can do so that you're in the running for the next great leadership role.
Yeah, I think for women, we don't like to talk about all of our achievements. It's like people must just notice it. Somebody must notice it from somewhere. It's like, I remember interviewing somebody who said, I couldn't believe somebody wasn't noticing that I was struggling with something. You know, if you don't talk about it, it's not going to happen. So for women, it's almost like you have to balance your competence with likability to sort of play down what you have actually achieved. So what advice do you have for women who are walking that tightrope?
One of the things that women face in the workplace is this idea of the authority gap. This is another book that I lent on while writing mine, The Authority Gap by Marianne Seacott. And she says, having a stellar record of success is a buffer against bias. So that bias that's inherent in the authority gap. And for me, the emphasis is on the word record. Yeah. How do you find the way to tell the stories? So what are the stages you're showing up on? What are the podcasts you're appearing in? What is the thought leadership that you're writing? What are the social media platforms that you're using? The tools are all there. The tools are there. But the onus is on the individual to start to use them and tell the stories. And they don't all have to be stories of perfection. They don't all have to be magical stories of I took this step and then the next step and then the next step. It's equally valid to talk about the mistakes. You know, it's equally valid to be vulnerable. It's equally valid to go, you know, I've reached this point, but here are the errors that I made along the way. Because that is the way that you build connective tissue with your audiences and people who are listening to you, is by being vulnerable and by being real and showing the errors that you've made along the way. So it's not about projecting perfectionism, but it's just showing up as a fully realized human being and saying, this is my experience. This is where I've got to. this is how I've done it. And by doing that, not only are you representing for the women who follow and creating a role model for them, but by actively building a reputation, you're actually building a bridge. It's an act of power that helps the next generation to follow you. So, you know, women who choose silence are not only choosing it for themselves or people from underrepresented minorities, diverse identities. If you choose silence, you're choosing it for the people who follow you. And that's really not fair.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's also a fine line to draw between social media and projecting this image of perfection versus being vulnerable and telling your story authentically. I think a lot of this generation have sort of developed aversion to social media because you don't want to project this perfection all the time. You know, I think it's a fine balance as well.
I completely agree with you, but our reputations are built up of our expertise, our credibility, and our passions. So I think what I would say to people who have a sense of resistance towards mm-hmm. using social media to build their profiles, you have years of expertise, lean on that. You have exceptional amounts of credibility, lean on that. And you have passion, lean on those. Tell your passion stories. You know, if at the weekend, if you've done 100 park runs, that shows resilience. It shows courage. It shows somebody who sticks at something. Or maybe it's you love doing huge hikes in the bush. That also tells something about your personality. So there's so much more to tell than just these are the awards and the buttons and the sort of ribbons that I got at work.
You interviewed more than 40 leaders for the book. Is there like a particular story that really shifted the way you're thinking?
Well, they all resonated 100%, but there is one particular leader whose story moved me, and they've been on my podcast too. Their name is David Nath. David grew up in India, had a very strong scientific bent, and is a data scientist, and also presents 100% as non-binary. So David is bearded, wears a dress, wears makeup, earrings, and their incredible courage of starting a new job in Ireland, showing up in the way they wanted to show up, which was wearing dresses, without asking HR what the policies were on how people show up at work. And, you know, when I talk about the obstacles that people from diverse backgrounds have been through, the obstacles that David has been through in their life to get where they are now a leader running team of data scientists, I think that was the story that genuinely moved me the most.
Mm. You talk specifically about leading with integrity and authenticity. What does that look like when people are under pressure at work, when there's really stuff going down? I'm thinking about, you know, when there's a major restructure at work, or there's a lot of pressure, or, you know, there's not enough clients, or what does that leading with integrity and authenticity look like?
You know, I think it takes a lot of self-knowledge mm-hmm. to be able to show up at times of crisis and lead with integrity. I was lucky enough to see that with a couple of leaders when I worked in corporate communications. I was lucky enough to work with one board member in particular, Adair Fox Martin, who was always calm, no matter how things looked. And if I look at Adair, she had incredibly deep self-knowledge. She has a great sense of humor, which really helps when there's a crisis. Amazing empathy for others, and had no fear of asking for feedback, and also had no fear of asking the opinions of others. So she didn't feel like she alone had to make all the decisions. She brought her team along with her and leaned on her team when she needed to, but made the big decisions on her own when she needed to. But I think it came from very strong roots and very deep self-knowledge.
Yeah, and I think you should never stop learning about yourself. Keep on learning lifelong. I'd like to build on the previous question. So what specific patterns have you noticed in women who have risen to the top with authenticity? What sort of personality traits do they have?
I'm very reluctant to lean on binaries. And in my work, I don't focus on women specifically, although I'm aware that that is your focus for this podcast. But what came through in the 40 leaders who I interviewed, men and women, from all kinds of diversities, including neurodiversity, including LGBTQIA, including people who are leading with menopause, including a single mother who was a leader, the commonalities were the obstacles that they'd been through, the depth of self-knowledge, and that ongoing journey of self-knowledge, empathy for those around them, incredible thoughtfulness about how they showed up, and incredible thoughtfulness about how they used language. So very, very conscious about their language. And when I say incredible thoughtfulness about how they showed up, I don't mean perfectionist. They weren't showing up as perfect. So one very senior leader who I interviewed, she was the president of a large part of a software organization. Her team was around 3,000 people. She said she doesn't want to be seen as a leader's, as a persona of a leader, which goes back to the coat that we were talking about at the beginning. So she makes sure that her team sees her, at least some of her messiness, you know, some of her humanity. Oh, whoops, I forgot that. Could you explain that to me again? Like I do really think that there's the sense of pressure when you've not seen role models of women in the workplace, the sense of pressure to be perfect. And I was really inspired by her idea of just be free to be messy. Just be yourself. Be comfortable with who you are and let your team see that.
Yeah, that really resonates with me. I mean, one of the most impactful things I've ever seen a leader do is we had a safety conference at work. And one of our CEOs was talking about a fatality that they had to go through and having to speak to the parents of the person who died. And he was crying on stage, you know. And you were like, okay, this is a real human being here. And he was really deeply moved about what he had to do in the wake of this fatality. So I think I totally resonate with that message of vulnerability and just actually showing some of the messiness as well. If you could redesign leadership from scratch, what would you teach future leaders first?
Yeah, so one of the things that became obvious to me when I became a leader or a manager of a large global team was nobody prepares you. So there may be some manager training, but it's uneven. It's uneven within organizations. It's uneven between organizations. It's uneven country to country. We're not very good at training our managers. And our managers are so important because they are the culture translators from the C-suite to employees. They are the technology innovators. And they are the people who make the difference to individuals. I mean, you know, we have a burnout epidemic. We don't have a burnout epidemic because the CEO said a mean thing. We have a burnout epidemic because managers are often not great. So I would focus very much on people managers and training them with people skills. And I would start with inclusivity. I think inclusivity is absolutely critical in terms of giving a team the sense of freedom that every voice is valid. I mean, we've all been in team meetings where the two loud people do all the talking, everybody's silent, and then afterwards at the coffee corner or at the water cooler, everyone's going, well, that was a bit useless, wasn't it? And I didn't like the way they said that, but no one feels safe to speak up. So psychological safety, people feel safe to speak up, inclusivity, make sure all the voices are heard. And if you have those in place with trust, that is when you get radical candor, and you get creative abrasion, and you actually start to innovate.
Yeah, and I really think that leaders should be noticing who's not speaking at the table.
Yes.
And calling on those people to give them voices around any table that we have a meeting.
May I say something more about that? So something I've really thought about a lot is how do you actually make a meeting more inclusive? And I think that if somebody is neurodiverse and you call out of, on them out of the blue, you're going to scare that person. So one way to make a meeting more inclusive is to send an agenda in advance so people know what the topic is, and don't send it 5 minutes before. Send it a week before so people have got time to think. If you want to be sure that the introverts or the young people or the typically silent in your team aren't always silent, you call on somebody the day before and you say, or a few days before, and you say, hey, this is the topic we're talking about in this meeting. You are the expert. I want you to plan 5 minutes and make sure that you've got something to say, because the team really, really needs to hear from you. So managers actually have to learn how to actively run inclusive meetings that ensure that all voices are heard. Otherwise, meetings will always be dominated by, you know, the 2 to 3 loud voices, and everyone's bored of hearing those guys talk.
Yeah, no, I like that. I mean, it actually means that there needs to be much more preparation and much more thought needs to be put into why we are having this meeting in the first place.
And do we even need it?
It's just a meeting. Yeah, and do we even need it?
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm sure we've all been in that situation. What is your hope for the next generation of women stepping into leadership roles? What do you think they should do differently?
I think let's chuck out perfection. Let's get rid of trying to be something. Let's get rid of masking. And let's practice showing up as you are and who you are. And let's get comfortable with asking for feedback, creating safe spaces for feedback to be given, and taking that on board. I think that work can be such a creative, fun place for people to shine if we all just stop trying so hard to be something that we're not and learn to embrace who we actually are.
Yeah, it's that authenticity again, you know, and a little bit of vulnerability in the workplace, which people are so scared of showing, because then you're going to look weak and then you might not get promoted or, and then as a woman in a leadership role as well, it's like you have to work 10 times harder to prove yourself over and over and over again. It's just crazy.
May I say something to that, Pietro? To that, that is why the record of success is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure your work is seen. If you're getting other people to talk about it, or you're writing thought leadership on LinkedIn, or you're going on stages and doing speeches, or you start your own podcast, whatever it is, make sure that your successes and your abilities and your credibility and your expertise are seen.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I always used to say to the women I was mentoring in the mining industry, get your boots on the ground. Go out there, go underground, show that you can do the work. And now I like this whole new angle about then tell people about it as well. Don't just do it, but tell people about it as well. So what brings you hope right now when it comes to leadership and the future of work?
So through the book and my own podcast, which is called Speech Bubbles, I have interviewed amazing leaders. The emerging leaders who I've interviewed are much more comfortable with showing up as who they are. They're much less bothered about the perfectionism or the shoulds, how we should show up. And that gives me a lot of hope. And the number of thoughtful, empathetic, kind, emotionally aware, in touch leaders there actually are out there also gives me hope. I just would like to hear more from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's one piece of advice you'd give to a woman who's doubting her right to lead right now?
Stop doubting. You're there for a reason. Believe your own PR and get on with it.
Yeah. Is there anything that you'd like to mention which we haven't covered up to now?
Oh, thank you for asking that. You know, we're in a weird time in the world, and I know South Africa has been through its own transformation, but globally we're in a slightly weird time where diversity, equity and inclusion programs are being deprioritized by companies or sidelined. And essentially, a lot of what I'm saying should be happening systemically. But when it's not happening systemically, the onus is on individuals to make sure that they are showing up for themselves. But I think my most important message is that by showing up for yourself, owning your reputation, keeping a stellar record of success, doing the effective telling, you're telling the next generation how to do it. It's extremely, and in fact, by doing that, you're building the system. It's extremely important work.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast, Charlotte. I've really learned a lot from you in this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. What a powerful way to begin this new series in On Change, with a conversation that reminds us that leadership can be different. Charlotte offered not just a call for change, but a clear and courageous roadmap for how we might lead with more clarity, credibility, and connection. She reminded us that reputation isn't a nice to have, it's a leadership tool, especially for women who are navigating spaces not originally designed for them. If you enjoyed this conversation, I encourage you to explore her new book, We Need New Leaders. And if you're a woman redefining success on your own terms, know this, your story matters, your voice has power, and the way you lead can open doors for others.